Do you want him to stay?
Not anymore.
Hello, everybody. My name's James. Welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents. And I feel a need, as I have done much times recently, to timestamp this and say we are pre-recording on Tuesday, just in case we lose a manager before this goes out. And therefore, let me introduce you to our Southampton correspondent, Matt Samuel. How are you, Matt?
I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. And also in is our West Ham United correspondent, Chris Stone, who I presume isn't going to lose his manager in the next 48 hours. How are you, Chris?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good man. Matt, what is going on with Hasenhüttl? What can you tell us, mate?
I mean, there's been all sorts of stories, I think, the last two games, you know, about there's conversations behind the scenes. Is his tenure over? And as we've seen, I thought before the Man City game, he might have gone. There was rumours, obviously, post the Man City game of conversations at Staplewood about, you know, whether we get rid of him. Nothing's come out as of yet. So right now, I fully expect him to still be in charge against West Ham. I don't think we'll make a change late in the week. And I think potentially if the result goes against us as West Ham, as I expect, then that might be the end. But yeah, it feels like it's a slow decline at the moment.
There was heavy speculation after the Everton game.
Yeah.
And it seemed to rear its head again briefly after the Man City game. Do you want him to stay?
Not anymore.
Really?
All credit to him. Like, I respect him as a manager. He's done well with what he had. You know, obviously we went through the ownership change. He had limited funds for a long period. We had some successes under him. He's a passionate manager, but I just don't think the players back him anymore. In watching that Man City game, I think it was quite clear that there were a lot of players on that pitch that weren't listening to his instructions. There was moments in the games where he got incredibly angry with us going, you know, back to the keeper. And there was a few points where he shouted at Belakotchuk for going back to Bizunu, and he wanted him to go forward. There was clear instructions, and I think the players don't particularly trust that anymore. And obviously formation changes, which we'll come on to, probably aren't helping. Personnel changes. He doesn't seem to know how to get the best out of this team anymore. And that's obviously the biggest concern.
Wouldn't judge too much on what you see at the Etihad though, mate.
No, but it's more we set out, I think he set out with a clear game plan. For the first 20 minutes, we actually looked quite good. You know, we looked to take the game. I was expecting three at the back when, you know, five didn't go with it. We went for 4-2-2-2, a little bit more attacking, but there were clear moments in the game. You know, the camera panned to him and he was visibly angry with players not listening to his instructions. And I think when you get to that point, I think it's done.
It's only four games since you beat Chelsea at home.
Yeah, but we lost to Villa and we all know what's gone on at Aston Villa. So, nah, not for me.
See, you know what? I spent, as I said, pre-recording this on Tuesday. I actually think the Villa game at Forest was the best Villa game I've watched of the last three, unbelievably. Chris, how do you see it with Southampton at the moment? Do you, as an outsider and a neutral, see it as something where you'd expect to change?
It's difficult for them, really, because if they're one of those teams which, not so much this season, but for the past three or four seasons, everyone sort of kind of thought they're going to be in the relegation battle, and they always seem to do just enough. I sort of look at them and think they've got teams that are worse than them. So if they do just enough, they'll probably stay up. But I guess to Matt's point, I mean, if the manager starts to get frustrated, then it can become quite a negative environment. So sometimes I don't think a change is necessarily necessary, but I think it can be inevitable, and maybe even there is a point where it is necessary because you just need something to freshen it up with. I mean, he's been there. What, he's been there about 3 years, hasn't he? Or is it longer?
Coming up to four, isn't it?
4 years.
Yeah. So it's been a while. I mean, he's got a difficult job because it's not, you know, they don't go out and spend a lot of money. So they're always struggling, and that pool of players seems to be getting ever smaller that they can kind of sell on. You know, they've only got maybe sort of two or three players that, as an outsider, you'd sort of kind of think of as decent. Obviously, James Ward-Prowse is the standout one.
Yeah,
but it is very difficult. I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't finish sort of, you know, I don't know, 16th, 15th, 16th, but they've got to do well to finish in that position. Everything's got to be right. But they always do seem to do. They're one of those teams that always seem to do just enough.
That's how I used to feel when I was a kid. You and Coventry, Matt. It was like we could never get rid of you. And then eventually, you did both go. It took Harry Redknapp, obviously, the Portsmouth fan,
yeah,
to obviously take you down. But I haven't felt like that since you come back. You haven't really been close ever, I don't think, to really being actually worried you'd go down. And there's been occasions where we looked at you and gone, oh, could even be a... I remember sitting here with you this time last year. You won five in a row, I think.
Yep.
And looking at potentially, could you push for top six, for example? And I do feel like we've been here loads of times before with Ralph, with the 9-0s, particularly the Leicester one.
Yeah.
He looked absolutely doomed. So he has recovered before, and suddenly then you go on these little runs. Why does this time feel different? I feel like this is the first time you've said to me, yeah, change.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of Ralph. I think he's a great manager and he's done well with what he's got, but something just doesn't feel right, you know, in his press conferences, his interviews afterwards, he seems down. The conversations between him and the players just doesn't seem to be there. That there's been leaks, particularly from some of the younger players, that he doesn't particularly talk to them during training. You know, it'll be heavily reliant on the coaches. Now, I'd expect, you know, Ralph to be in them, you know, kind of arm around the shoulder saying, come on, let's push for this. And I'm not sure that's there anymore, which is the biggest concern. And it's not entirely his fault, because I was really keen in the summer. Obviously, we needed a forward. We didn't get one. And that's not down to him. And it's quite clear that we're struggling for goals. Che Adams is as good as he can be on his day. He's not the answer. Mara, I think he's too inexperienced at the moment. It was a gamble and he's not ready to start game in, game out. And quite a lot of the kids that we brought in, albeit prospects, you know, Adouzi, Larios, they're great players, but again, you can't rely on them for 90 minutes every single game. But it's not helping that they're thrown in for 60 minutes one game, then they're completely missing for the next. And there's no real template that he's sticking to. He's making six changes one game, four changes another. That's not helping.
Who's buying these kids?
It's probably going back to, you know, the new ownership and potentially go into a model that we were used to. I expect he's having an input, but yeah, I don't think he's solely responsible for some of the signings, particularly from City, because obviously we ended up getting, I think it was four from them. And there's a clear relationship between the clubs. That's not down to the manager. That's down to that relationship being built up over time. And again, last season we saw it with Chelsea. We brought in three.
These kids look good though.
Yeah,
none of them look bad. I've been a little bit critical of Bazuno, but you think he's clear first choice and will improve with time. There is a correlation, certainly, Matt, with one of the other kids who's been instrumental for you already.
Yeah.
Got injured in that victory over Chelsea, lost all four games since.
Yep.
Is Romeo Lavia already your most important player?
It's madness 18? To say, but yeah, honestly, that the impact of him being missing is huge. And I think it's been clear to see, like, Lavia being in there with Prowse allowed Prowse to play his game. And now that Lavia is missing, there isn't anybody there alongside him that I think Prowse can trust. So he's having to play a more negative mindset. And, you know, Prowse's looked poor by his own standards. And I think that's been clear. It's potentially going to impact his World Cup place. And if it does, I don't think he'd be particularly happy with that. But losing an 18-year-old should not have the impact it has had on our squad. And I think you touched on it in a previous pod, you know, Romeo, for instance, why we sold him when we don't have a clear...
Is that right? Or was his legs gone or something?
No, I just think, you know, time was there. He was potentially, you know, Ralph maybe thought he was behind Diallo, behind Lavia, but Romeo is a completely different player to Diallo. And even to Maitland-Niles, who's obviously coming, Romeo got stuck in. And I think perhaps he could trust that. he'd always be there to break up play. The other guys aren't.
Yeah, I think they were a good partnership. It seemed like an oversight that you let him go. You didn't get any money for him, basically, really, like in terms of football sense anyway. Yeah, a surprising one. I really liked Oriol Romeu. I think he went and let the others go and play, basically.
Yep.
Chris, we've obviously spoken about pressure on Ralph. Oh, look who's here.
Gate crashing people's poll just to tell Matt that they're going to lose 6-0.
This is
come on, Chris.
This is Clash of the Correspondents. For the benefit of the audio listeners, Sudge has just come and gate crashed.
He's excited.
What an idiot. Yeah, Chris, any pressure on David Moyes? I keep getting mixed signals. I get some West Ham fans are unhappy. I get some West Ham fans are like, stop talking about it. Two wins in a row. Where you at with him?
Yeah, I mean, I was never against him as such. I thought it would be a huge mistake if we got rid of him. But I think he needed to get the results, and the last couple of games have taken that bit of pressure off. You know, there's a bit more of a focus on other managers and that kind of thing now. We didn't start well in terms of results, but I don't think we weren't completely bad. But I think the rot had maybe with the squad had set in a little bit at the end of last season, which is something Moyes had already kind of sort of said himself, that the results towards the end of the season were starting to, the performances were starting to drop off. Obviously, the Europa League kind of flattered that, but in terms of our league, we did sort of flatten out quite a bit. But it would have been a massive mistake if we'd got rid of him. But there was not. I know you get social media, but there was some noise, and I think the longer it goes on, that noise then picks up and then becomes more real in terms of the terraces, or the, you know, not the terraces, but in the stadium, outside of social media, when the results don't go in there, because people want results at the end of the day. We weren't playing particularly badly, but we weren't playing well either. We were just, I don't know, we just didn't really have anything to offer. Obviously, we had all the new players, so, and they weren't getting in the team, so there was a lot of frustration being built up from that. But I think it all stemmed from getting the results. If we'd got the results, you wouldn't have heard anything. And that's probably the fickleness of certain elements of any fan base. As soon as you don't get the results, they're looking for a reason why. And it's, well, blame Moyes because the new players aren't playing. Why are we not playing him or you know, that person? And I think now we've got the results, I think that's taken a bit of pressure off. He has played a couple of the you know, the newer players now. He's sort of switched things around. And I think he's starting to get to what he's maybe is a more preferred team in the Premier League. I don't think it was down to defensive problems as such. We had a few players missing, but it was just, there was just something which just wasn't clicking. Something just wasn't quite happening. But it wouldn't take a lot for that to change. And I don't think we've suddenly gone from being absolute, you know, rubbish to world beaters. It's just that fine margin. I mean, you look at the game on Saturday, you know, we concede early. Fulham fans feel quite aggrieved that they lost. And we've come out with a 3-1 win. And that's, at the end of the day, all that matters.
Yeah, I feel there's an element of the fan base that wants to poke a finger at Moyes whenever there's a bad result, because it feels like the bad result with you matches with an under par performance quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I find you one of the toughest teams in this league to beat. But I think that there's a core at West Ham who won't be turned on the quality of the football, I think. And unless, like you said, like the results were as good as they were sort of like last year, keeps everybody under wraps. But as soon as you have a bad result, people are out the woodwork saying, quality of football's this, that, and the other, tactically, yada, yada, yada. Can that be moved away from, or is that always going to be there? And it is a small minority.
I think the way things are with social media now, I think that's always going to be there. I think it comes along a lot quicker, and people get frustrated. And I think there was probably an increased level of expectation at the start of the season. There was a recognition that we had a few tough games, but to not get any points in, or I can't remember even how many points we did get, but in the first sort of 6-7 games, to not really get anything out of those. And that was, and you know, the Everton result was a bad result. it's things like that really, which are a little bit of a nail, and they add fuel to the fire, and it's a little bit of a it almost could become a nail in the coffin. But it would have been a mistake, but I don't think you'll ever get away from it. I just think that, like you said, if the results are there, then that is kept sort of dampened really, because most people are realistic. If you get the odd bad result, they're not going to suddenly start saying, get rid of Moyes.
Yeah, I think it was the lack of goals was particularly alarming at the start. What did you get? What, three goals in your first four? Yeah, three goals in your first seven.
Something like that, yeah.
Obviously, five in the last two kind of puts that to bed, and no problem. But then you'd expect to be beating Wolves at Fulham at home. So
yes.
Is there a problem? What are the expectations from you for West Ham this season in the league now?
I would say definitely top half. I would still say we can and should be challenging for that sort of sixth, seventh sort of area to get into Europe by some sort of means by the league place. I don't think we're out of that by any stretch. So I still think we should be going for that. And I think we should be going for as far as possible, hoping to even win the Europa Conference to qualify that way. I think we've got the squad now to challenge in both. I don't think you have to sacrifice one over the other. I think they should be of equal importance.
I think that you've got 9 points in the group as well, so you've basically got that job done. So I know obviously like Bowen played in Anderlecht last week. Would you expect him to play the home game this week?
I think he probably would, because Cornet's not quite ready. He might not start, but I don't know. I don't know how he's gonna play it. I mean, he can. The thing with Bowen, he's one of those players that is almost better playing lots of games, lots of minutes. If you rest him, it doesn't actually benefit him as much.
Keep
as
the momentum you going. Think. I understand. Yeah.
I think if we beat Anderlecht, then that's pretty much wrapped. That's wrapped that up then.
It's group one, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So it knocks them out, but obviously, or knocks them down, as it were. But it makes sure, you know, we've got 12 points. We can then rest players in the last two games rather than have to play him in that.
Matt, how do you see West Ham?
I think they're a decent team. They've always been difficult to play against in the games that I've been to, and obviously the games that I've watched. I think you've probably touched on right there. It did feel like it took a while for you to integrate your new players. But now that you've done so, you're seeing the benefits from it, particularly obviously Scamacca, Paqueta. I think those are the type of signings that I would hope that we should have been trying to look at in the summer to bring in a forward. Like you clearly knew Antonio couldn't do it himself. So you went out there and you got somebody, and we didn't. And I think that's the real difference. And West Ham almost feel like we were, you know, during the Pochettino in kind of those days. They're long gone from us, but West Ham are the kind of team that we should be aspiring to get back to. And I just can't see it for the foreseeable.
Is there something stylistically that suits you playing them though, Matt? Results last year, you played them three times, won twice, drew one.
Yeah, it reminds me of
winning the FA Cup, where West Ham actually picked a strong team. And
yeah,
you and I had oh my God, what has Ralph done with the team here? And you still won anyway. Yeah. Is there something now that suits playing against West Ham?
I don't know. I think last season was obviously a positive, but I've been to West Ham games, home and away, where we've been battered. So I guess it depends on how we set up at the weekend. I'd expect again 4-2-2-2. Try and get at them. But I just think West Ham are stronger than you were last season, probably across all areas of the pitch, and we're going to find that difficult.
You mentioned the system there, Matt. So you think stay with a back four?
Yeah, likely.
I don't really know from game to game what he's going to do. I mean, I think when you lost to Everton, I think I got five of my predicted 11 correct. I was absolutely miles off.
Yeah, the Everton team sheet was a mad one. I mean, full respect for the changes, but to throw in six changes for that game was three too many, in my opinion.
So what's best, back four?
I think it suits us more. Obviously, we spoke in the summer And throughout pre-season, it was back three, back five. And it was quite clear we were setting out to do that. We did try for the first couple of games of the season, and we were getting found out, you know, against Spurs, for instance, we got battered. Leeds, it took a change in system for us to come back into the game. And then Leicester, we kind of tweaked it and we got the result. So I think he's probably thought, well, you know, it was a try, probably a failure. And then he's gone back to what he knows. We've had a couple of little tweaks. I think we did a 4-2-3-1 at one point, but last week was very much 4-2-2-2. Similarly, you know, against Everton.
And Chris, any chance of you changing system? There's a lot of FPL managers be sitting with Emerson going, play three at the back, play three at the back. Is that forthcoming, do you think, in the next few?
I don't see it. I don't see why I change it now. I mean, I think playing Kerrer at right back seems to obviously play there for Germany. And then whether I'm always had that in mind, or I don't know whether he's saw him play there and thought.
In central back, I didn't realise that was the case.
I know. Okay.
And then he played there.
And then he just, so he just obviously put him in there after he played there for Germany. But he's done really well there. And I think he's got enough pace there. You lose a bit of a attack, but it's taken maybe a little bit of spotlight off him, so it's maybe suits him actually a little bit. So I don't see us changing from that system, because it allows obviously Rice and Suchek to still play there. I know there's been sort of a little bit of noise around Suchek not being at his best, but I think there's an element where 2 years ago when we got those players, they improved the quality. The difference is now the quality of players that we have signed, they're now maybe slightly inferior, Soufal and Suchek, to those players. So it's not that they're bad players, it's just that some of the squad has moved on. So I don't think they'll change from that back four, if I'm honest. It works really well, because you've got Cresswell, who's can play as a centre-back anyway, or, you know, as a three, and as a wing-back, he's not really suited to that role. So that's where, if we play a five, that's where Emerson's going to come in. So I think there's games where he might switch it up, but I think he's one of those managers which doesn't kind of chop and change for the sake of it. He tends to stick with what he's got. And if it's working in the Premier League of four, I don't see it changing anytime soon. You know, even when you play the easier teams, I think he learned that a bit last year. You still have to play the same, almost play. He almost only knows one way. You can change the personnel, but I don't see it changing massively, if I'm honest.
What would you say to Emerson owners?
I mean, he's cheap, isn't he? He's 4.1, I think. Is he still?
Because you don't really need them for the impending 4-4 draw or whatever it is at Anfield next midweek.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess if you've got Williams, then if you were looking to move off him, he could be your fifth player. But if you've got him as a third player, he's not going to play all those games. The danger is he's probably going to, you can probably guess by the Europa Conference. If he starts in the Europa Conference, he's probably not going to start in the Premier League. And that's how
I don't see him changing from the flat four that he's been playing in the Premier League recently. Is it players that we should be looking at within West Ham, Chris? Could you look at, obviously, Kerrer and Zouma are 4.5, Dawson's 4.8, Soufal's not in the team at the moment. I guess that's a sell for people. Kerrer's 4.5. Who am I missing? Oh, Cresswell's 4.8. Missing someone?
You've got Johnson, maybe.
Dawson and Cresswell, 4.8, sorry.
So you've got Johnson as well, Ben Johnson, who's probably maybe even ahead of Soufal. But as I say, I don't know that he'll change Kerrer at right back. It's worked pretty well in the last few games. And he can probably play in some of the harder games there as well. So I don't see why he's going to take him out. I wouldn't really look at the defence, if I'm honest. I mean, we've got a few games where we've got Bournemouth coming up. But there's other teams which have got cheap players, which have got better fixtures. You know, you've got the likes of Palace who have got a nice run. So it's, why would you need a defender?
I think what it is if you're going for a West Ham defender at the moment, you need it to play in game week 12. And in spite of whatever people may be saying about Liverpool at the moment, you don't want to be playing a West Ham defender away to Liverpool.
No.
If I compare you to Southampton, your fixtures till the World Cup, Chris, in my opinion, are much better than Saints overall over the six. Yeah, I'd be more likely, Matt, to buy Kyle Walker-Peters than a West Ham defender, I think. Is that madness? And it's because you've got Bournemouth away next week rather than Liverpool away.
I don't think it's mad. No, I mean, Bournemouth, it's that derby that in my mind isn't a derby, but to a lot of people is. And we'll go there. You know, we have to get a win. There's no doubt about it against Bournemouth. Whether we do is a different story. But yeah, I'd probably prefer KWP for game week 12 to Emerson, who I currently have.
What about young Juan Larios? He is 4.0, Matt.
He is, but it's whether he starts. We've trialed him, obviously getting game time, started against Everton. I still think Perreault is probably favoured in that position, and I fully expect it to be KWP one side and Perreault the other. Larios just feels like he needs minutes built up rather than thrown straight in. It doesn't feel like it's the same scenario as we had with, say, Livermento, where, you know, hit the ground running. I think Larios is smaller in stature. He's a good technical player, but yeah, I don't think he's going to start consistently. So it would be one hell of a gamble.
How's Bella Kotchop playing?
Well,
because I think he really impressed everyone in the first couple. It was great against Man United, even though you lost.
Yeah, very impressed with him. I think probably one of the best signings we've had in the summer, comfortably. He obviously got the call up internationally as well. He's a very good player. Seems comfortable, but commanding as well. Like, you know, he shouts at players. He gets the ball around. He can positionally maneuver people in front of him as well. And he's not afraid to take the ball out. We've seen quite a few scenarios where he's ended up, you know, in the final third and he's taken a pot shot. And it's great to see. I just would like, I'd like to see a consistent partner alongside him, because, you know, we've, Salisu for me is preferred, but for some reason, you know, we switched it and Coletta Carr came in. And I just think you need that partnership with Bella Kotchup and Salisu to at least try and stop, you know, the opposing teams. And I think defensively, that's what we've improved.
Why did he change it? Because actually, take the first game and the last game out. All right. You had a bad day at Tottenham opening day. It can happen. You had a bad day at City. Those two results aren't going to define what happens with your season. In the games in between, okay, there's no clean sheets in there, but there's only two games where you conceded more than one.
Yeah.
Like, it's not been going drastically badly defensively, I don't think.
No, I think defensively has been our strongest point this season, like you say. And, you know, that back four, and I know Bazunu's had his, you know, comments and negativity and whatnot, but I've been impressed with him personally. I think he's a step up from what we've got, which is a positive. I certainly prefer him to McCarthy, and I think his outball is comfortably better than McCarthy. He can pick out a player, which is good to see. Yes, he's made errors. Villa, for instance, it was his mistake at the end of the day that cost us the game, and he's had moments, but he's young and I like what I see with him.
Have I been harsh on him?
A little bit, but it's...
Go from that. Go on.
From an outside perspective, I think it's right, because, you know, he's the youngest keeper in the Premier League and he's made errors. So the world can see that. And, you know, these games have been televised. You know, that Villa game, albeit it was a bore fest, everybody saw the mistake that he made that led to the goal. And he should be putting that over the bar. He shouldn't be trying to palm it where he did. So I think he knows that himself, which is, you know, he can only improve. And I'm sure the coaches behind the scenes are improving, but there's no way I don't think he comes out of the team. I think he's...
There. Oh, no. One of the things I've kept maintaining is still that should be in goal. There's no question. I just felt there's instances, but doesn't look big.
No.
I think like the Sessegnon goal opening day, like there's no way he saves it.
No.
But he might as well been leaning on the corner flag because he's so small at that moment.
Whereas against...
Make yourself bigger.
Against City, I thought he's improved. I know we conceded four, but he made big saves. And I think that kind of helped.
Yes, he did.
He wasn't scared to come out and try and, you know, close down the attacker, for instance.
Chris, any question marks on your goal? Okay, it was a few questions in the Andres Pereira goal, somewhat harshly, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a bit harsh. I mean, quite a few sort of people saying, but at the end of the day, that was probably the fourth option that you would predict the player taking, and it was a good finish. It was unfortunate it was in the first minute. I think there's always going to be question marks because as soon as... I think people are just waiting for Fabianski to muck up so that Areola comes in. He's there been waiting. It's a position which Arriola is going to assume at some stage. It's just probably when. So it's either going to be an injury or a series of mishaps or something like that. But if we're winning, I don't think there's as much pressure on Fabianski.
Do the fans want that to change? Because the fans will see a lot more of Arriola than what most of us do, because Arriola is playing all the European games. And I did watch the game in Anderlecht, and he made an astonishing save from Wolves' lonely Fabio Silva towards the end of the game. Do the fans want that to change? Or is it like you just know at some stage, naturally, it will?
I think there's a bit of a split. I think there's people that want that desperately want it, and as if Fabianski's, you know, he's completely lost everything. But it's, I suppose, the area where Fabianski is starting to weaken is when he's coming out, because he's obviously getting older. He's going to be a little bit less reactive in terms of his speed and agility, but he's still a good keeper. I wouldn't be quick to get rid of him, but there's not a lot in it. That's the thing. There's not a lot in it. They're both good keepers. Abiola's there. I think it's probably just a case of when rather than if. And Arriola is more than capable. I'd have no issue if he comes in, but I'm not desperate to get rid of Fabianski at this stage, necessarily, personally.
Matt, is that wrong with James Ward-Prowse?
I just think it's what's alongside him isn't helping his game at all. He's being forced to defend, and I don't think he's too happy with it either. And he doesn't trust what's next to him ever since obviously Lavia's injury. And I think that's so clear. And
Diallo just not good enough? Is that where we're at with it, basically?
Yeah. I mean, he has his moments, but yeah, compared to Lavia, which is crazy to say, I think he is way ahead of any other defensive midfielder that comes alongside Prowsey.
Okay. Maitland-Niles obviously has played.
I wasn't impressed.
Okay, go on, just elaborate on that, because obviously he played against Everton and then straight out the team again.
He looked lost at times, and it may well be because he's just not used to this kind of system that Hasenhüttl's, you know, expecting of him, and he's not played for a long time. So to expect him to then come in and try and work with it, and I think one of the comments early on when fans were questioning why he wasn't getting in the squad or the team was that he needs to get used to how we play. And I think it was clear that that wasn't the case against Everton. There was moments where he was completely positionally not where he should be. He was losing the ball. And that's not to say that he won't come good, but I just don't think he's performing as expected of what needs to be alongside Prowsey.
Okay. I watched your game against Wolves, Chris. I actually thought Souček played quite well.
Yeah, I think he's not been playing as well as maybe he was last year, but I think he's asked to. He does a lot of work. I think there was elements in some games before where he was losing the ball and he wasn't tracking back as much as what he was. So I think that was and you were losing the game, so that was rightly getting people's frustration. But he'd popped up with a couple of goals here and there across, you know, various competitions. I think he's probably almost by default, because there isn't probably someone there. I know we've got Flynn Downs, but he's still young. Tuukka Pekka playing there. I don't think we really know where Paqueta's best position is yet in the team.
So it's still where he is now, isn't it? For the meantime, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly the last two games he's created good chances for Skamaka. So I think that he probably will stay there. I don't see Moyes changing him straight away, Souček. He's doing enough. I just think the rest of the squad has improved so much, and maybe his impact isn't as high. But when the first season he was there, or the first end of that season, the beginning of the next season, where he scored something like 8-10 goals, he was getting forward in open play a lot more. A lot of people think he's just there for the corners, but he was getting in on the end of things. He's not really doing that as much, but he is getting a lot. He is putting in a lot of defensive work, and that's also allowing Rice to get forward more, because Rice is doing less pure defensive work and a bit of everything. So he kind of facilitates that, and it's good to have two players that are fairly defensive. I mean, his ball playing isn't great, but he's effective with what he does. He's tall. He's, you know, he's good in defensive areas and he's good in attacking areas because of his height. So there's an element of it's not broke, don't fix it. His form's not great. I think maybe a rest would, you know, maybe a game, one or two games out might help him. Just to, you know, give him a look, just to rejuvenate, because he has played a lot of football.
And Lucas Paqueta, impressed with what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think he's settling in pretty well. I think he's one of those players that obviously his output, he's got a couple of assists. I don't know what his goal output's going to be. It's not going to be prolific, but I think it's more about it's the impact on the fans. You know, he'll do a few sort of fancy things, he'll showboat a little bit, but he does put a tackle in as well. So he's still adjusting to the Premier League, but he's a good player.
FPL option? 6 million.
I'm not sure, if I'm honest. I think there's others above him because I don't know. Yes, he's going to be a good player for West Ham, but as in terms of FPL and output, I don't know what he's going to achieve. I personally prefer Bowen, but then obviously there's a lot of competition around that price point. And then probably I'd say, I know it's obviously a forward, but Samaka, because obviously he's going to be starting the Premier League games now, I see. And he's scoring. He's getting your bonus point here, one or two bonus points as well. Well, they both are, really, to be fair. Paqueta and
if I said to you, Chris, you got to buy one of Paqueta or Fornals or Souček. Fornals, for the record, he's 5.3, Souček 5.4. Where do you spend your money there?
I'd probably go with Paqueta, but that's probably because he's a more exciting player to watch. I don't think there's a lot between them. If I'd rule Fornals out of that, because he's at most risk, because while he could play in the 10 position, Benrahma could also come in and he could get rotated that way, or he could come off. If we're chasing a goal, he's going to get taken off. So I'd say on that basis, Paqueta.
So on Bowen, 83% of Premier League goals scored at home. Why? What is it? That's abnormally high, mate.
I don't know, because there's no real logic for it, in a way, because he kind of does the same things in all of the games. He's trying to do the same things in all of the games. It's really hard to say. I guess because there's more onus on us to attack. And then you look at some of the teams that, you know, if it's just this season that you're looking, that percentage is based on, then I think that he's also playing as a second forward sometimes in positionally. He's not just staying on the right. I guess sometimes away from home, if he's staying on the right more, he's not drifting in as much, but he does drift in a lot. I know obviously going to watch him, he comes in, there's times where he's the furthest one forward. Not as much with Scamacca, but certainly when Antonio was playing there, he was so he'd get, you know, if the ball's played over, he'd be the one running on and getting those goals.
So three of the next four are away, which includes trips to Anfield and Old Trafford. Should I be selling?
So do you got to be selling?
Should I be selling Bowen as an owner?
I wouldn't personally, because he's always going to get a chance. He's always going to get himself in a position. So you never quite know. It wouldn't. I mean, he had that run last year, which was pretty unbelievable, but he was pretty much scoring against anyone, wasn't he?
If you were sitting there at the moment, you had Bowen and Scamacca, and I think a lot of people have got some, if Mitrovic is fit this weekend,
yeah.
I think a lot of people got some really interesting selection dilemmas in terms of who they start or who they don't. If you were sitting there with Bowen and Scamacca going into this weekend, and you were starting one of the two, who would you start?
As it's tough. I would probably say 55-45 Bowen, purely because he's going to play the full 90, and he's just as capable of scoring in the 90th minute as he's scoring in the tenth minute.
Okay. Schumacher an option if Mitrovic is out, in your opinion?
I think so. I mean, I've got I brought in Isaac and then he got injured, so I swapped him out for Wilson. When Newcastle's run is not terrible, they've got some, a bit like us really, they've got some good games and some not good games. So I think he's probably, it depends on what your team setup is. I would probably have, if Mitrovic was fit, I'd have him over Scamacca probably. But if he's your third striker, then maybe that's where he would come in. But he's definitely an option because he is getting bonus as well. I mean, he might come off the last 10, 15 minutes, but he's still, if he's scoring a goal a game, then that's pretty much all you need, really. Especially if he's getting you 8-9 points.
What West Ham do you own at the moment, Chris?
I've just got Bowen at the moment. So,
and I take it, have you got wild card left or not?
No, I've done wild.
You haven't. So, is he in your mind? Because I think from 13, when a lot of people were wild card again, then you're going into three of the last four is at home, and the three home games are Bournemouth, Palace, Leicester. He becomes a hold, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah, definitely for those three. I mean, I've got him, and I've only had him for 2 or 3 weeks, and he's served me quite well. So there's an element of that. If he goes in the Southampton game and he comes out and he's had no shots, and other away games, but he's a dangerous player to rest and put on your bench. He could hurt you if you do that. So I think if you've got him, you play him really.
Yeah, agreed.
But I'm contemplating. I was contemplating having Scamacca, but then I've got other fires which I might want to put out because I seem to have somehow got Sterling in at some point and that's not working out too well.
No comment. Matt, what West Ham have you got, mate?
Got Bowen. No, that's it.
I think captain this weekend?
No. But I think the fact that he's on pens is the big difference for me between him and Scamacca. I was one of those that hadn't really appreciated it. And obviously we had a brief conversation in Slack about it. See, Lanzini would take it, I guess, if he's on the pitch, but given he's not playing, Bowen becomes the pen taker. So
is that right? Just to shout that quick to Chris. If Lanzini's on the pitch, do you think he takes it?
I think so now. I mean, there's been no natural successor. Rice was the other person, but he's missed a couple. So I don't think he's going to be on them.
No, I think it's Lanzini. Bowen is probably the order, but I think it's conceivable that it could just be Bowen now anyway.
Yeah.
Now that he's scoring.
I mean, Lanzini has taken one this season. He took one in the conference. I think it was a conference. I can't remember if it's the conference or yeah, I think it was the conference. But Bowen wasn't on the pitch, so we don't know for sure. But I imagine right. Lanzini would still be the first choice because I think he's a slightly better penalty taker. But I mean, Bowen took him at Hull. So if he's probably in the Premier League, he's probably going to be most likely because he's going to start.
Yeah, great. Sorry, Matt. Bowen, a hold through for you?
Yeah, comfortably.
Any others on radar for you?
Not West Ham wise, no.
What about Saints players?
Definitely not.
This is just straightforward.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch us unless you wanted, you know, someone to be your fifth midfielder or your fifth defender. I still probably wouldn't even go there.
What about if we get to game week 12, and obviously because Arsenal and City blank, there's FPL managers are going to go into the game week before making any changes with perhaps 8, 9, 10 players, or might even walk into other fires and maybe need something just for the one game at Bournemouth. If that was the case, you went, let's say you have a good result the weekend. Right, I want a bit of Southampton. Where was the first place you would go?
Defensively, because I don't know who would start anywhere else on the pitch.
And is that therefore got to be Walker Peters for similar reasons, or would you consider Bella Kotchup?
I'd consider Bella Kotchup. I mean, again, set pieces, he's a threat. Can pick up bonus points. I think he's only 3 points behind Walker Peters. I mean, neither have scored particularly a lot, but given Walker Peters is the fullback, I think Bella Kotchup is an option. And they're the same price. So, you know, either one could potentially get a clean sheet and a couple of bonus points against Bournemouth.
No love for Revo, Stuart Armstrong?
No, because again, who knows if they're going to play. And on Stuart Armstrong, I've been, you know, a big fan over a number of years. He's not impressing this season. There are periods in which he just looks like he's giving up. Things aren't paying off for him. And normally I'd see him track back, you know, after making a mistake. And I think there was a clear moment in the City game. He just stood there and put his hands up when we conceded. And that isn't the Stuart Armstrong that I expect to see. And on Aribo, I think he's probably one of our better midfielders, but again, isn't starting week in, week out. And I think a lot of Saints fans would like to see him do that.
Che Adams has scored twice this season.
Yeah.
Both in the game he was a substitute, which was against Leicester, so it doesn't count because,
nope.
I mean, Sonny got three as a sub against Leicester, so it's no big deal, right? Is he struggling?
He should have scored a lot more. So I think the chances that he's missed have been huge, and there are big moments in games where he puts the ball in the back of the net. Against Everton, for instance, missed a chance. Against Leicester before that, missed a chance. You know, against Villa, missed a chance. It's consistently becoming a problem, and he's not the best finisher in the world. He gets moments, but he's not an out-and-out forward, and I think that is becoming a big issue between now and obviously when the January transfer window opens.
Do you think, Matt, you will stay up?
Yeah, I think as per seasons gone by, we'll have a run of games, 4 or 5 games where we pick up wins.
Where you look like the fourth best team in the league.
Exactly. And looking at the fixtures beyond the World Cup and Christmas, and I think I'm on later on before that, but those are the key games where if we pick up 12, 15 points in a run of 6 games, I think that will help. What I'm concerned by is we're on 7 points now, and looking at the fixtures up to that point, other than Bournemouth, and even that is a problem, I don't see where we're picking up points.
The bookies have you basically kind of behind Forest and Bournemouth, joint with Leicester, as third favourites to go down. They're an obviously very unpredictable animal at the moment because they can't stop conceding goals, but I think we know that they definitely do have the ability going the other way if they can get it right defensively. Yes, as Matt has alluded to, he's coming back on Clash of the Correspondents prior to game week 16, so we can discuss which Liverpool players are the best one-week punts. But also, actually, quite importantly, because when we've all got these unlimited free transfers, Southampton have the best run of fixtures after the World Cup. So I think Matt's right. Don't buy any Saints players, but this is very much a watching brief. Brighton, Fulham, Forest, Everton, Villa, Brentford, Wolves is your 7 games when we restart from game week 17. It's a really nice run of fixtures. Although they all look a little bit more difficult at the moment for some reason. But as a group of 7, I don't think you can knock that as a set of fixtures, actually.
No.
So, yeah, we'll revisit assets then. Do you think Ralph will still be in charge when we next speak?
No.
What type of manager would you want if he does go?
I think we need a manager that is used to playing with youth and getting the best out of youth. And for once, I'd like to see is maybe go for a manager that's still in charge somewhere, because time and time again, we go for someone that is out of a job. And it would be good to maybe see us try and step up and say, look, we'll offer
you this package. Poach from someone else because people do it to you.
Yeah, exactly. It's about time.
Go and take the academy manager from Man City. You've taken everything else from their academy, mate.
I don't think there's any way that man leaves that post this season. So
I don't know, mate. You get offered a first team job in the Premier League. What's his name, do you know?
Nah, can't remember offhand.
All right, someone will smash it in the comments or in the replies on Twitter. Guys, really enjoyed that. Thanks so much. Matt, where can everyone follow you on the Bird app, mate?
At @CS_wipeout.
Good man. And Chris, same to yourself. Thank you, mate. Where can everyone follow you?
Twitter on FPL_SkyAddicts. I had to think about that one. Jesus.
You do that every time. I know. Predictions. I nearly let you get away with it. Correct score prediction for the game on Sunday, Matt.
2-1. Okay, sure.
I was going to say the same, 2-1, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a both teams to score kind of game, I think. I'll go the same. I think 2-1 to West Ham at the moment. Really big period for you, Matt. I think you'd be fine, Chris. It's brewing. It's coming back to what we expect. I think the integration of the players, I think we haven't spoken about the absence of Nea Figuered, who obviously was covered in his first choice as well. So it's a slow integration to getting these players in. Maybe as well for you, Matt, Lavia, if he's back soon enough, and I guess he's probably, what, maybe 2 weeks away or so.
Close.
Yeah, he's hopefully going to make a big difference for you coming into these games before the World Cup.
Yeah.
Next week, guys, 2 planned Clash of the Correspondents for you. on Tuesday ahead of the game week 12 deadline, Newcastle versus Everton with Simon Bibby and Sean Norton. And next Thursday, we'll be out quite late in the day on Thursday, but ahead of game week 13, Manchester City versus Brighton with Johnny Pringle and Sam Murray as well. But just leaves me to say thank you again to Matt and to Chris. Good luck this weekend, gents. Cue music, please, Manchild.
The Fantasy Football Show.